Ladies and gentlemen, at this time I need you all to silence your cell phones and hold your applause till after we are finished.
And most importantly, shut your mouth, because United by Wrestling podcast is live, baby. I'm your host, Dustin Destruction, with my co-host,
The Shapester, baby.
And we are here to talk good old AE Dub.
Can always talk.
You know, if you don't know, AEW had... Don't cut me off. Let me finish my sentence, boy. Anyway, good old AE Dub had their second biggest pay-per-view of the year. Well, second big pay-per-view in general. Because, like I said, I don't count All In. So, it was a good show. What'd you think, Shapester? Sorry, before you cut me off and I cut you off. What were you going to say?
I mean, no, it wasn't just a good show. It was a fucking incredible show.
And that's it. Thanks for tuning in, everyone. That's the podcast. All you get this week.
Yeah, you get a 1 minute little shtick of our introductions, cutting each other off, and well, it was an incredible show. Thanks for watching.
Anyway, what the fuck?
That would be fucked up. Damn.
Just an announcement too. Next week, in two shows from now, we will be having full video. So you'll get to see our beautiful faces on your TV or computer, whatever the hell you listen to.
Or phone
screens. Or if you listen at all. I don't know. Leave me alone.
But yes, we will be debuting video podcasts on our YouTube channel.
Yeah. Yay us. Well, or yay you, depending on how ugly we are, we might break our TV. But all right. So we started out with All Out today. And there's one big rumor that got squashed that I think you and me knew wasn't going to come, but there were still weird people that thought he was going to show up.
Yeah.
CM Punk did not show up, so can we, lay that to the bed?
I was now? After this, because I know, with him doing StarCast and doing the interview, his little panel thing, interview, whatever.
She said, what line? That kind of made people, really?
Well, he talks about he's not going to be at All Out, so everybody doesn't have to, fret about it, and then he's like, he says, I'll talk to WWE or I'll talk to anybody. They just have to call me. I'm always up for conversation, but they have to call me.
And that didn't help matters.
And that didn't, of course, help matters at all either. And, of course, with him being in town, in his own hometown with AEW in town, everybody's like, oh, he's going to be there. He's having fun talking wrestling. No, he's not. He didn't show up. Can we just lay it to rest, please? Let him do his own thing and just leave it alone.
So if he shows up, well, I'll mark our asses off. But until then, let's just kind of let him live life and stop speculating.
Please.
It's not happening anytime soon, it looks like.
Exactly.
Even though it's been 5 years, so it's going to keep going longer, I should say.
Obviously, it's going to always be there, but hopefully after today, it kind of just takes a severe back burner, because obviously if he was going to do anything wrestling-related, it would have been tonight, and he didn't do it. So let's just move on.
And if he shows up, he shows up at some point.
I think that would make it even better.
That's why I don't speculate.
Yeah,
I want to be surprised. I want the shock factor to happen whenever he does, or if he ever shows up somewhere.
Yeah, it's like if he ever shows up anywhere ever, just let it be a surprise and be like, holy shit, no way. And then if it happens, it happens. If it doesn't, well, let's just move on.
So there's that. Before we get into the buy-in and the actual card, what were your initial thoughts? Your reaction? What's your reaction to the show tonight?
I thought everything that we talked about regarding certain things that we wanted to see going into All Out, and a lot of things that we talked about, I was happy to see that we caught a lot of them, and that a lot of those things didn't happen, production-wise and the Elite booking and things like that all were much better tonight. In fact, they were damn near perfect.
What about commentary? Did you think that was improved?
I thought the commentary was improved for, I mean, not like dramatically, not like holy shit.
Well, they had Golden Boy, who I thought had better chemistry with Excalibur and Jake.
I love the fact that Golden Boy is now a AEW commentator, because that dude is honestly one of my favorite commentators, and he was one of my favorite commentators in esports. And when he came on to AEW, it was like, wow, his chemistry with Excalibur was insanely good.
I hate to say it, JR, I think, was actually the weak link.
He was, and as much as that sucks to say, but I mean, him and Excalibur, honestly, if you didn't know Golden Boy was new, you'd have thought he'd been commentating wrestling for years.
So when's Shivani show up, though? Because I thought he was supposed to be starting effectively.
I think Shivani's probably television at this point. If he wasn't there tonight, I'm sure he's probably television.
JR will be television, probably.
Yeah. I'm assuming that'll be television. But I thought overall, I mean, I thought everything that we thought needed to be addressed was addressed to the T.
Did it live up to your expectations? Or
it honestly actually exceeded my expectations.
Yeah, me too. You know, I think that the booking was booked right. I don't think there's not really one complaint I have. The only thing is, I think Darby Allin should beat Janela Havoc. I think that's the only one. Like, Allin's younger. He has the most upside and potential. Right. You know, Havoc didn't really need to win.
Right, right.
You know, here's Janela, but, you know, Allin comes off, you know, taking Cody Rhodes to a damn near time limit draw to now, you know, just losing in a front together triple threat match.
Right.
A badass one, a hardcore one, but kept front together, lost it.
I mean, and I think that's always a good thing when you can go for a show like this and go from the pre-show all the way to the main event and only have one if booked right moment. And
yeah, it wasn't a huge one. I just think
no, it wasn't. You know, it wasn't like show making or breaking or anything. It's just if you had to pick one if booked right moment, that would be the one.
Yeah, and Matt,
then
I agree.
And then it was like everything else actually exceeded any expectation I had going in.
All right, so we'll start the buy-in.
Start with buy-in.
I think this buy-in was the best of all of them.
I did too. I agree. 100%.
You know, I said I wasn't going to live tweet it, and I ended up live tweeting because I was so hooked and entertained by it.
Yeah, I mean, honestly, like, it took them... I saw somebody tweet... I can't remember who tweeted this, but somebody tweeted that, you know, after four buy-ins, it took them four buy-ins, but they finally got it right. And I agree with that.
Smart to death.
I think it was Smart to Death, actually. Shout out Smart to Death. But, yeah. You know, this buy-in was like, holy
wow. True professional. Tweeting despite what happened to him,
and it's like
kudos to him.
Yeah, but it's like that was very true. I mean, this buy-in far exceeded every other one they've done.
Yeah, I think they got the Casino Battle Royal concept more down. The one with the men's at the Double or Nothing was really sloppy.
Right, right.
I think that they kind of perfected that. You know, the tag team match was absolutely solid.
Yeah, I mean, it was definitely a buy-in that would make you want to grab that last-minute pay-per-view buy.
So let's just say I was going to buy it regardless, but let's say I was a casual fan.
Right.
That buy-in would have made me watch it.
Yeah, so. Yeah. It's like if you're a casual wrestling fan that was on the fence, that would be the one that would make you want to check it out.
So starting off with the buy-in, we had Nyla Rose. She won the 21-woman Casino Battle Royale to become part of the AEW World Championship match on October 2nd.
Yeah, in DC.
On TNT's
debut.
AEW's TV. What? How am I wording here? I'm like mumbling
on,
my
words. She won the Casino Battle Royale to become one half of the Women's AEW Championship match on October 2nd in DC.
And that's not their television debut, right?
That is their television debut.
That is. That's what I was thinking. That's what I was trying to say, and then, like, I started questioning. I couldn't remember if that was the exact date of their TV debut, so that's what happened, the mumbo-jumbo.
The only reason I remember that is because SmackDown on Fox's debut was 2 days later.
So yeah.
That's how I remember their TV debut. It is their TV debut.
So, this match, we'll talk about the winner in a minute, had some, like, pretty good surprises, actually.
I agree. I was actually more surprised than I thought I was gonna be.
From Priscilla Kelly,
Emma,
or
Tanel Dashwood, if you want to go by her new name, her regular name now. Mercedes ODB. Martinez, who was, I think, one of the biggest ball drops from the Mae Young Classic.
ODB was there,
and ODB was in it. I honestly, though, the weird part is I didn't even, like, hardly know that Jazz was in this. Like,
I saw she wasn't showing up, but then she showed up. So
I was like, she was, it's like, but, like, I didn't even know she was out there when she was out, except for that little stare off her, ODB, Awesome Kong, and Nyla had that little four-woman stare down. It was like, that was the only time I even, like,
really knew it was awkward.
Yeah, it was, like, it was weird.
She didn't have a huge presence in the match.
But, really. No, I mean, it was definitely, It definitely had a lot more surprise, which is a good thing. It's not a bad thing by any means. It was an amazing thing to see. You know, it's like my personal favorite surprises were Mercedes and Emma and Priscilla Kelly, because I'm a huge Priscilla Kelly fan.
Yeah, Mercedes Martinez, I'm a big fan of. I think she's absolutely damn good at what she does. Good in the ring. Very powerful. I don't know how she's not been signed to a big-time promotion before. I don't know if she's signed now. I'm not going to say. She's not signed for AEW, hoping they sign her.
Yeah, because like I said, I think she was one of the biggest ball drops from the Mae Young Classic.
Oh, yeah. She's
she was definitely one of the biggest ball drops there, and hopefully after this she is signed with AEW.
Tenille's signed to Impact, right?
Yeah.
So does Impact and AEW have a working relationship, or is Impact still on those terms of you can just take bookings anywhere else because of their pay structure?
Well, I think you can work, like, I don't know if it's all bookings or certain ones that I guess they approve of. I don't know how their contract stuff works nowadays. I mean,
I know they don't have full locked-in contracts. Like,
no.
WWE or AEW has on certain. No, because even Omega is going to go back to Japan for DDT. So
yeah, so it's like, you know, I mean, either way, it was awesome to see her there in it, and I thought she did a hell of a
surprise too.
And of course, oh, you can't forget Eva Lee. She did a hell of a job too.
Oh yeah.
But no, it honestly was, like we talked about a minute ago, a much better battle royal, because the concept seems to be more understood now.
Yeah.
Than the first one that they did.
Yeah, the one page one.
Right, right.
Do you think the right person, Nyla Rose, won?
I do. Because I think.
Why is that?
Because, I mean, obviously it's clear, like, her opponent in October, we'll get to that in a minute. You know, people like her are like who they seem to be wanting to build the division around, and I think that obviously setting up the match that they're going to have in DC for the title, David Goliath versus Goliath type match. But I think Nyla and a few others are going to be the key pieces going forward, at least at the beginning of the AEW women's division. So I think having her win was the right call.
I kind of think. Yeah, I mean, I think Nyla's the right call, too. But I think kind of AEW's kind of making a statement with this, because they made a couple statements with doing the first in wrestling.
Right.
I'm not going to say that's the only reason she won.
No, it's like...
how dominant she was. But I do think they're alluding to the David and Goliath battle. I think they want a kind of a big, imposing force,
right,
which you could definitely say Nyla is,
yeah,
to anchor it, but also... I don't know, I'm trying to word my, you know, because this might be controversial, hot take.
Right.
Trying to, like, use my words and kind of wisely. And so I think they're trying to kind of show their support for different communities.
Well, I mean, and that's never a bad thing. And I don't, you know.
And she has to be a damn good choice of a wrestler, too, to help support.
And that's the thing. It's like, you know, you see people tweeting all this bullshit, but it's like, yo, you know, she's a hell of a wrestler for her stature. And, you know, she, you know, when you, because I don't want to say anything controversial either, so I'm trying to, like, figure it. Because it's like, being a part of that community myself, you know, it's awesome to see.
That's why you should say before, because you're actually part of the community.
You know,
you'd be able,
like,
to word it better than I would.
Being a member of the LGBTQ community myself, you know, that kind of history making thing to see AEW support, because AEW is definitely supporting a lot of great causes, and to make that statement of, like, look, we don't discriminate towards anybody or anything. So
if she affiliates with what she affiliates with, and we're going to let her do that, we're not going to say, oh, no, you were this, so now we're going to identify you as that.
Yeah,
we're going to identify you as how you want to be identified.
Right. And that's that kind of acceptance is especially in that kind of acceptance in a big time major sport shows how far, you know, the community has come in, you know, in the pursuit of that kind of acceptance, because, you know, if you were to rewind the clocks back 10, 15 years ago, that would never be a thing.
No.
And to see them being like, look, you know, and then also it's like, I know people are tweeting all this hate and bullshit, but it's like, yo, her coworkers, the people that she has to work with, the people that have to entrust her and she has to entrust to take care of each other in a match, don't care about like those things. They want to work with her and they want to put on a great match. And the bookers, her bosses, don't care either. They're going to let her be her. And, you know, it's like, this is who you are. This is what, you know, this is what you are. And we support that. And here's how we're going to do
they're
things.
They're all big advocates with it. So.
Yeah. It's like, I thought, you know, making not only the statement of her as the character competitor for going forward in the women's division, but also the statement of, hey, we're AEW, we accept everybody, and you can be what you want to be or what you are here.
Yeah, that's why I didn't want to say anything controversial. I don't want to say that's the only reason she won.
No,
I
think
she's dominant. She's a dominant force. You know, has power that, you know, not a lot of people have, and it's kind of like a good, because I mean, I'm assuming she's gonna win. I don't know. I'm gonna go with that route. Right. And I think she's kind of a good standard bearer, dominant champion out of the gate.
Yeah.
It's kind of what I think they would like.
Yeah.
While also, you know, other things that they may or may not go into it.
Right.
So.
Right.
And I fully support the decision. I don't want anybody like thinking I'm against it or anything. I don't think I'm wording it that way, but I never know. I'm fully supportive of winning. I think it's a good idea.
Right.
So, up next, we got Private Party versus Angelico and Jack Evans.
And Helico.
I don't care. You know, I like the guy. I'm not very pronunciation accent guy.
And Helico.
So, what did you think about this match?
It's like we talked about before, actually, we went on air. Private Party is one of those damn teams that, you know, either you or I, we both said we didn't know much about or really anything about going into, was it Fyter Fest?
Yeah.
And, you know, it's like after Fyter Fest, they really put themselves on the radar. And then after this match, it's like, honestly, they're now, like you stated as well, they're one of my damn favorite tag teams in the business. These guys are just that damn good, and they're that damn entertaining. They blend their gimmick with their in-ring work so well, because it's like they're one of those teams when you initially see them, you think they're a gimmick tag team, which in ways they are, but most...
I mean, they have their own section and crowds when they're in it, so obviously they're a gimmick tag team.
It's like, you know, which they are, but, you know, a lot of gimmick tag teams, the gimmick doesn't stop when the match starts, you know? Like, they just keep doing the gimmick thing, but these guys...
Best
like,
friends?
It's like when Private Party wrestles, it's like, holy shit, you know, these guys are that damn good, and they blend it so well. And what I mean is, like, they blend it so well, they're so easy to get behind because of just how damn good and entertaining they really are.
That's what I think too.
And the best, like, I know you mentioned the best friends, it's like they're the same way, they're in the same boat. It's like their gimmicks,
they're a little more gimmicky though,
they're a little more gimmicky, but they do
hugs and stuff in the middle of the match.
Like, but Private Party is like, they're now one of my favorite teams in the business, hands down.
Absolutely. They're young, they're gifted and talented as holy hell. They have a gimmicky get behind because it's funny, it's entertaining. You know, like, who has their own section of crowd reserved for them and kicks out freaking, what was his name?
Alex Jabaley
out of his own stadium. It's like, they're just like really easy to get behind. Like I said, I didn't know who they were before Fyter Fest, so... You know, I'm really glad, you know, that's one good thing about AEW, too, is they're exposing people, you know, great talent to people, because I would probably have known who they were if it weren't for that.
Honestly,
and I'm ashamed to say that, because of how damn good they are, and they are one of my favorite tag teams.
Right, it's like...
Sucks, I didn't know who they were.
And that's the good thing about it, is now, after Fyter Fest, they put themselves on the radar, and then after tonight at All Out, they pretty much stamp themselves as a permanent fixture. It'd be like, holy shit, we need these guys more and more in the tag team division.
And it looks like we might begin our first feud for TV, I don't know, but if I remember right, Evans and Helico turned heel on them?
Yeah, they did.
Yeah, I think they attacked Private Party from behind.
From behind!
Yep.
There we go.
And so it looks like that might be a featured feud going into television.
Which is good.
I can get behind that.
Like we talked about on the preview show, we wanted to see some storylines created going into TV. And, well, there's a great tag team feud going into TV right there.
That's perfect.
Because and Helico and Jack Evans are in their own right an amazing tag team.
Oh, very good.
And you know, I'm a big fan of both of those guys as well. So that, I mean, that's definitely, I can get behind that tag team feud for going forward.
All right, so that was the buy-in. Now we're going to cash in to the main card.
Okay, I like that. I like that.
They bought us in, now we're going to pay the cash to get in.
Because everybody has a price.
So we got SCU, West Coast Represent, versus the Jurassic Express, Marco Stunt, Jungle Boy, and Luchasaurus. What are your thoughts on this match? I think SCU won. Very happy about that. But Luchasaurus stole the whole fucking show.
He did. He stole the whole damn match. Because he's one of those guys, like, you know, he's tall as shit. And it doesn't look like he would be able to move as well, you know, well as he does, and move as fluidly as he does. So it's like he definitely had the moments and the spots that were able to steal that match.
Yeah, and the dude's front roundhouse kicks, like, it's just like he picks his toe up and throws it. Like, that's how, I mean, who does that? And he's a grown man dinosaur doing all that. And he's super, like, over. That's how likable he is.
Yeah, I mean, it's like when you have a gimmick like his, it's like, and he's able to do the things that he's able to do with it. It's like the guy is just so entertaining to watch.
And the people eat it alive.
And I mean, he is arguably, like, if you go down the list of the AEW roster, he's got to be probably the most over on it, if not like the most over on it.
I mean, I guess the question is when they give him a singles run eventually.
Yeah, eventually they're going to have to, because he's just that over.
The only problem is, you know, he's super over as a face right off. To be a singles run, he'd probably have to turn on Jungle Boy, which would be a... Yeah, I don't know.
I think hopefully they haven't backed it into, like, a corner on, like, potential, like, kind of thing, because he's so over on his own, but he's also over on, you know, with Jungle Boy as well. So it's kind of like, let this run out, and then maybe, I don't know how Jungle Boy would do the turn, but maybe he could do it. And, you know, that... I think
those two, unfortunately, are going to be slip as a tag team. I can't see either of those two turning.
I can't either, because it's like everybody...
Jungle Boy is special. I can't take him seriously.
Yeah,
as a heel.
You can't.
Sorry.
You can't. And
it'd have to be Luchasaurus, but that would kill his whole, you know... natural connection. Yeah. Organic connection.
And which is really hard to find nowadays when you have that, just get genuine, you know, like, organic overness.
It's amazing how, you know, AEW lets people strive instead of force feeding into what you want over.
Yeah, it's just, like, here, look, you know, go out and do your...
mask and just do.
Yeah, it's like, do your thing and see if people like it. And obviously people do. But I have a question, though. Is SCU like the official AEW match show kicker off people? Because correct me if I'm wrong, but have they been in the opening match of pretty much every AEW show?
I've been in the buy-in a couple of times.
Well, it's like the main card. Like, every time they're on the main card, they've been the first match of the show.
Oh, hey, which I'm not complaining. I said there's no better tag team to kick it off in the mood.
I'm not complaining about that. I was just curious, because it's like every main card show that they're on, it's like even when they're on the buy-in, they're the first match on the buy-in.
Yeah.
But like I said, that's not a complaint by any means, because
I guess they're sprinters. They're the ones that start the marathon.
Yeah, I mean, and hey, like I said, you know, like you said as well, what better way to kick it off than with three of the best in the business?
And it worked today. Hell of a starting match. It got people hyped.
Yeah, I mean, there's what, 30 some years, or 60 some years of experience between the three of them. So, and they're three of the best in the business. So that's the perfect way to start the show off.
I don't know. You can ask Kaz and Sky if they're at Nash's party again. You can drink a beer from and ask them.
Hell yeah.
But yeah, that match was incredible. This match surprised me on how low it was on the card.
Yeah.
I was not expecting. I was expecting Havoc, Allen, or Janela, the Dark Order or something first. But
right.
We got Pac vs. Omega as the second match on the main card.
Yeah, I was honestly...
You think that was a little early?
I... with the way that the match order of the show played out, I actually think that it was a really good spot for it.
I think they were trying to give it enough time because it was going to be great, and they want to give a couple matches for the fans to unwind before the bigger matches of NXT, maybe.
And I know everybody was, hyped for Omega's match originally for All Out, but then of course when Pac got announced, they were still hyped for it, so they wanted to see it, and this match needed the time that it got. So it was like, it shocked me that it was early, but of course, I was more than happy to see it, because holy shit, what a match it was.
And yeah, especially for a week notice.
Like, it was a week and a half, 2 weeks maybe?
Barely anything.
Yeah, no, hardly any run for it at all.
And Pac and Persia just caught it hot in the ring then, the way it was going, so I mean.
And I think they had to, because it was like, it was only literally a week or a week and a half build, notice that you're gonna be facing Pac now. Wait, what?
And Mox is out, Pac's up.
And it's like, okay, so pretty much you just went watch film on Pac and then, called it in the ring.
Hey, mate, that match was fucking phenomenal.
Honestly, I think, it's hard to call, but I mean, that's definitely in match of the night discussion.
Because there's three that you can really pick.
Yeah, it's like I say, I don't think I can call it, but this is definitely one of the matches of the night.
And I think the finish was perfectly done.
Yeah, the finish was proper booking because it made both guys. It did what it needed to do. It made Omega, even though he took the loss, look strong because he didn't tap or get pinned. He passed out. And Pac needed a big AEW debut, and what better way to get that than by beating the best wrestler in the world at me on that.
I'm saying Kenny Omega showed that, how many good matches do you have to get people to put him back in the conversation? I don't understand why he got out of it.
I don't either. I guess people think
it's because he took a lot less dates this year when he signed with AEW.
Well, and it's like, I guess because people think, okay, so he's losing every match in AEW. He's not the best in the world no more. Wait a minute. Obviously, you don't understand how wrestling works.
I don't even know if it's that. I just think, the other guys on the list, Ospreay and all of them have more exposure. Kenny's kind of took in a little bit of a reprieve this year.
And it's like, okay, so he knows that he's going into a major run with a new company. So the first half of the year, why not, you're obviously going to want to slow it down a little bit so you can have the matches that make people remember why you are the best in the world.
Well, he had a great match to show why he is.
And this match was one of those reasons why, if you don't believe Kenny Omega is the best in the world, watch this match.
I think I was tweeting earlier. It's like, those dudes do shooting star presses and stuff like it's taking a bite of candy.
Yeah.
It makes a guy like me think I could do it.
And it really does.
Then I would sit and drop on my head and be dead.
Yep, it's like pretty much essentially. Because it's like, I thought
that's
the same...
how easy they make wrestling, though, look.
Yeah, because it's like, I thought the same thing when you tweeted that. I was like, it really does. These guys are just that damn good. And it's like, maybe I could... Oh, wait, no. Me trying stupid shit like that's why I actually can't do it. So I'm just going to
Omega does a freaking rollover, set... What's the thing where what's the move called where he puts you on your shoulders and does a somersault you into the ground? You know what move I'm talking about.
Are you talking about his one-winged angel?
Yeah, but then he transitions right into a moonsault after that. And then he hops onto the second turn, rope, and then does a moonsault.
Right.
Moonsault off that.
Yeah.
Yes, I think it is the one-winged angel turned into a moonsault.
Right, right.
Like, he makes that look like
like
a drop kick, a standard DDT.
Yeah, I mean, and it's the fluidity that he's able to do those. And the way that he's honestly, I guess you can compare it to a Street Fighter character because he transitions his combo so fluidly.
Yeah. And,
for example, his one-winged angel into his moonsault, or, his roll-ups into drop kicks or DDT, whatever he needs
to
do.
V-trigger into something.
It's like the V-trigger into the, or like the combo of the V-trigger into the one-winged angel.
Yeah.
And things like that, or his moonsaults, or his tempe suicidas, or anything like that. that he's able to chain together so quick and make it look so easy. It's like it's just absolutely incredible to watch.
And Pac, you know, fucking's doing running shooting star press like it's easy.
I mean, it's like I can't imagine how hard it's got to be able to do a running shooting star press
in midair. And, like at least to say, at least a top rope gives you elevation and come down. Like
right.
How do you do it standing? Like standing, running, shooting star press.
And it's like, you know, he makes it look so easy. It's like, hey, maybe I could.
No. We'd look like Brock Lesnar.
We'd end up like Lesnar knocking ourselves out or dying probably. But it was like, holy shit.
Awesome match. Now all I can say is I'm ready for Omega and Mox.
Please. Like, maybe at Full Gear. Maybe. Hopefully.
Yeah, because it looks like we might be getting Paige versus Pocket Full Gear 2.
Yeah, that's what it looks
like. So both guys have some big feuds coming up. It was a great match, you know, as a replacement. Loved it. Possibly best match of the night. And now both guys are going to go on to even better, very great feuds. It was a good match to kind of set up, especially if they're going to be big feuds like Mox and Paige. You know, you don't want one. I mean, obviously someone has to lose.
Right.
But you have to have the person that loses, you know, be looking strong.
Right.
That happened. And that's 0-2 for the Elite, too.
Yeah.
The kick count, which is huge.
Yeah, that's a big thing.
Brandy lost and Omega lost. You know, Omega's been the one that's been putting over more people than any of them.
Yeah.
So he hasn't won, really.
No. Except for, like, once, I think.
Yeah. Six-man tag match.
Right.
Up next, we got the match of Sick Fucks.
The Sick Fuck match.
Havoc versus Allen versus Joey Janela. I have to say, AEW has the most lenient triple threat matches I've ever seen in my life. You know, I didn't recall, you know, putting, you know, tacks in some guy's mouth and
duct taping, you know, it shut.
Duct taping into a chair and duct taping that shutting him, and that being legal in triple threat matches. But
or staple guns or skateboards with thumbtacks tacked to the bottom of it.
Cracker Barrel moonsaults.
Or Cracker Barrel moonsaults or Cracking Barrel coffin drops or... I've never seen that legal in a triple threat before, but
yeah. Do you think a match like this was good for the card?
I mean, it was like, I thought it was a hell of a match. I was just surprised at the lack of blood in it, but I mean, it was a hell of a match, and I think this was the only match on the card that we could actually attach a if booked right to it, because like we alluded to in the opening of the show, I think Darby Allin really needed the win here. Because he's got, I think, more, you know, Janela's already a superstar in wrestling, whether people want to acknowledge that or not. And Jimmy Havoc is Jimmy Havoc. Everybody knows, if you really follow wrestling, everybody knows who Jimmy Havoc
King
is.
King of the Death Match.
And everybody remembers his Tournament of Death win in CZW and all that shit. So, you know, and then I think with Darby Allin, with his match with Cody, when he took him to a draw and nobody lost, I mean, that match really, I think, put him on the radar of a lot of people who didn't really know who he was. And then I think this match would have been a great momentum continue, I guess would be the phrase there for him. And I'm surprised that he didn't get that, but I mean, the match itself was a great wind down, I guess, after the two wrestling clinics you saw before this. And it was like, I really liked the placement of this match on the card, because it's like you just saw Pac and Omega put on a clinic, and then it's like, well, time to enjoy some sick fuck shit. And you have Darby Allin literally ollieing a skateboard with tacks on it onto Joey Janela's back.
God, like, the pain that had to feel.
I mean, because not only do you have thumbtacks going into your back, but you have a damn skateboard landing on it.
And if you've ever massive bumps, I don't know how his back ain't broke after that match.
Like I tweeted out, I'm pretty sure, I'm convinced at this point, Darby Allin's back is unbreakable. I don't know how the hell that dude's after he did the coffin drop onto the ring apron and didn't break his back, the hardest part of the ring for those of everybody who don't know. It's like after that, if that didn't break his back, and then tonight he does a coffin drop off the top rope with a Cracker Barrel on his back and lands on the steel steps.
What I want to know is how Joey Janela didn't knock himself the fuck out when he did that dive moonsault and he cracked his head on the apron, like on the damn
on the ramp
flooring.
Like, yeah, it's like on the flooring shit. Like,
and you could hear the crack.
Yeah, you could hear the thud. I mean, it was nice and loud. And every audio mic in that place picked that thud up.
Alan has a solid back, and Janelle has to must have a fucking solid melon.
Yeah, because like honestly, I think anybody who is lesser trained in that style of match would have knocked themselves completely the fuck out.
Yeah, but I feel like there's very few people that can.
I think Janelle is one of those people coming up in matches like that that is able to.
Him, Mox are the only ones
It's like him, Mox, and Havoc are like the only ones that can do shit like that and not completely like end their careers on the spot. Because yeah. I think if anybody else does what Janela did right there, they're done. It's over.
Because yeah, that wasn't even a botch. Like, no. There was no one around. He just jumped off. Like, there wasn't even, like, he looked back. There was no one standing there. And he still jumped and fell on his head.
Yeah, it's like. Anybody else?
Weird spot.
Anybody else? That's it. You're done. But Janela is just unhuman. All three of those guys are pretty much inhuman.
And weird thing. I think that was the most hardcore spot because that was the most dangerous spot.
Yeah, it was.
Weird enough to think with all the other shit we saw, but that was the most dangerous one.
Yeah, like in terms of like
long-term. Because the ground has no give. So like, remember, you have to fall just right. Apparently, he knew how to do that. So.
Yeah, and that just shows Janela's actual skill level. That I know a lot of people give him shit for the way he wrestles, but you got to have a skill level to be able to take that and know how to do it just right, so you don't completely fuck yourself up.
Yeah. So this match up next, it's Dark Order versus the Best Friends. I think if there was a low point of the show, boring. I hate to use it. But if you want to say there's a boring show,
let's call it the piss break. Unfortunately, you know,
not even that. Like the Best Friends are good. And, you know, the match was okay. I just felt it was pretty. I don't know. I felt it was kind of boring.
I thought because it's like I don't know.
I'm just not huge on the Dark Order.
Well, I honestly, great minds think alike. Because I was just about to say the same thing. I don't know if it's just me or whatever, but. Honestly, the Dark Order really does nothing for me.
No, it doesn't.
I mean,
they're big guys.
I mean, you know, they're decent sized dudes, especially Evil Uno. Yeah. It's like, you know, they're not bad wrestlers by any means.
No, they're not bad at all.
But
it's their style.
It's just like they really don't do a whole lot for me. And
then they come off all those crawlers of a whole bunch of fat guys with their shirt off with a mask on. Like, what is that about?
Yeah, it's like, okay, yeah, they're called the Creepers. And yeah, well, they certainly look like it. They definitely make sense.
I just don't get what the point of that is either.
I don't know. They just don't do a whole lot for me personally. And
maybe that's because I don't know much about them. I haven't really researched them very much.
Neither have
Probably because they haven't done it for me in matches.
Yeah, it's like, I think it's one of those things where they're just not that appealing, I guess is the right word, or if it's just their characters or whatever it is, they just don't really do a whole lot for me, honestly.
Well, apparently they must be doing it for Cody and them because they're advancing in the tournament. They beat the best friends.
I'll say they get the first round bye in the tag tournament.
One of the most over tag teams, the Best Friends, they beat. So
yeah, I mean, hey, they must be doing something right. I mean, I guess they're trying to establish one of the first like big heel tag teams in AEW.
Yeah, because I think they're the only like heel one.
Well, now aside from Angelico and Jack Evans. So they're trying to establish like a group of I guess heel tag teams, and the Dark Order is definitely a heel tag team. But they got to do honestly. I think with the Dark Order, if you want to get them,
have some kind of more storytelling. Yeah, maybe TV will help.
Maybe TV will help them because honestly, what they've been doing at like Fyter Fest and All Out and things like that, what they've been doing in AEW since they've been there is pretty much honestly like we've seen it before in tag teams, and it's nothing new. They need story development. And
I know we're not the only ones that feel that way because on the timeline when we watched and I saw a lot of like, who are these guys?
Right.
Like, Dark Order doesn't do it for me. I saw a lot of that.
Yeah. Okay. So it's not just us, and it's like they need. I don't know, they need more, like you said, I think they need more exposure, they need a different way of, like, their tactics, and they need something that's going to get them more heat than just...
There got to be some kind of story of, like, why they do the tactics, like, okay, they have creepers that come out with their
right
shirts off, like, what's behind that, like, what's the point of this, like... dudes with their shirts off and masks coming out to the ring with them standing at ringside. Like, what?
Yeah, like what's all that?
What is this?
Yeah, like, it's like, it just looks weird if you don't know what the story is behind it. And then, like I said, I think they need something that, you know, generates them more heat. You know, more, because, like, I don't know if it was the audio or what. It didn't sound like there was any engagement there towards them at all.
Yeah, that match was probably the most quietest on the card.
And it's like, you know, that's not a good thing. You need some type of reaction.
Both teams didn't really get reactions for some reason. But I think partly because the pace was slow. Just,
yeah,
that whole match was off.
Yeah, that was definitely.
Which sucks. The best friends are really good.
Yeah, I mean, I'm a big fan of both those guys, and it's like, you know, I thought they were actually going to go over, but hey, I mean, I guess, like I said, they must have a plan for the Dark Order, because they've won pretty much every match they've done.
Yeah, I'm not trying to even think about that, because I don't know AEW's booking at all right now. So once TV starts out, become a lot more.
Right.
The one thing I thought I got right predicted didn't happen, and I made myself look like an idiot. So blatantly and arrogantly saying you heard it here first and it didn't happen.
Yeah.
So,
yeah.
Up next, we got Rio Bushida. Winner faces Nyla Rose for the Women's Championship on AEW's TV debut.
Well,
this match, you know, I hope people understand, like, the art they're seeing when you see Japanese wrestling, because that thing was a clinic. I like Rio, but I'm a big fan of Shida's in-ring work, mm-hmm. her technical ability.
Yeah.
And those women, you know, put on a fucking 15-minute match, somewhere around there, like, straight-up exchanging holds, you know.
I mean, it was an absolute around,
like, everything you can ask for in a wrestling match, you got. That, you know, is within the rules of the match.
I mean, it was indeed an absolute fucking clinic. And
one thing that was a little off was the ending. I think Rio kind of botched. It was either Shida fell, tried to go back too quickly, or whatever, but I think they botched the crucifix at the end a little bit.
It looked a little off.
I felt like Rio hit the ground first before Shida went, so it looked like.
Yeah.
Other than that, the match was pretty damn good.
I mean, the match was a clinic, and I love that style, that Japanese style. That's one of my favorite, absolute favorite styles in wrestling. And matches like this are why, because
like catch wrestling and Japanese style are my favorite.
Yeah, it's like that. That is it's and this match was exactly why, because it was technical. It was, you know, it had its pace moments where the pace picked up, and I mean it was absolutely insane and
very well balanced.
Aside from the little off ending, I mean, but hell, still even that there. Their professionalism and their skill levels, you had to do a kind of a double take on the ending, because they kind of covered it so well that you had to, like, wait, it did look a little.
The reason I noticed was the ref didn't start counting right away.
Right, yeah,
he wasn't expecting it.
Yeah, that was the biggest giveaway on it, but, I mean, it was an absolute clinic, and I love that style.
Yeah, I do too.
And I mean,
like I said, catching that.
I think, you know, it's interesting for Rio, obviously, being the one to face, like, the David versus Goliath battle, and like we talked about at the beginning of the show. But I mean, I don't think she's gonna win it, obviously, but I mean, I really like her. She's one of my favorite women in the business, and I'm glad to see that she's at least gonna be in that match.
I knew she was small, but I did not know she was only 98 pounds small.
Honestly,
Jesus Christ.
I didn't even know that either. I was like,
I know she couldn't have barely been over 100, but God, being over under 100 pounds in a wrestling ring, that's...
It's weird. Marco Stunt weighs more than she does. It's like, what?
Like, well, AJ Lee probably does.
I mean, hell, because, like, Marco Stunt's 102, Rio's 98. Like, I'm like, damn.
But,
I mean, but hell, I mean, I'm looking forward to that win for that match.
Yeah, I think she's gonna get annihilated by Nyla Rose, but it'll be a fun little David Goliath kind of fight.
Yeah.
Up next, we got Cody versus Sean Spears. Obviously, Sean came out totally Blanchard, and Cody came out with good old MJF.
This is where you quickly took down your tweets.
I'm a little salty about this, but
You quickly took them down.
After the match, I took it down as an unpinned because I was arrogant and pinned it to her profile. I said, and I said on the preview show that Cody was going to have MJF. I got that right.
Yeah.
I said that Cody and MJF would win, but I said after Cody beat Sean that MJF was going to turn on him, and well...
I mean, at least they teased it. They didn't...
There was a tease, but it didn't happen, so I'm like blatantly saying, you heard it first, this is going to happen after this match. Like... My hot take that was almost right on, but epically fell on at the same time. Like, who pins that to their profile?
Say, I was like, honestly, because I went on, I was going on the profile to send a tweet, and I'm like, wait a minute, where's our usual?
I say, because I took the show one down.
Where's our usual pin tweet? Wait, what's this? Oh shit! And then I'm like, okay, let's. I went along with it too. I quoted the tweet and made it a little thread and was like, listen to this man. And then it's like they teased and it's like, oh, yes, crap.
I guess we're used to predictable storytelling.
Yeah, forgive us. We're used to predictability and normality and we're used to predictable things.
I wasn't hot, completely off. They teased MJF hitting him with a chair, so I mean...
Yeah, they teased it, so it was... The foundation is there.
It's coming to where I predicted. It's not there yet.
It's just not there yet.
That's enough about my stupidity. What did you think of the match itself?
The match itself, I thought the storytelling in the match was absolutely brilliant. And can we talk about for a minute, though, this contact Sean was wearing? I need to hook up with a pair of them, because that was badass. But no, the
I wonder why his eyes were glowing so much.
Yeah, it's like these special, like demented looking contacts he was wearing.
Yeah,
it's like, but
no, maybe Peyton bought it for him for the honeymoon.
It's like, here you go, have your big match with these on, they'll make you look badass. But no, it's like the match itself was an absolute storytelling clinic on the rivalry that they've been having. And it was like, it was really cool to see Arn Anderson, by the way, still deliver the spine on the pine like he does. Because I was a little worried about that when I saw what he was setting up for. I was like, Arn, what you doing? Like, oh, damn. Nice. Hell yeah. But no, the match itself.
They built it up nice that, you know, Tully was teaching Sean to beat Cody the same way that Tully beat Dusty at.
Yeah.
There's that kind of foreshadowing a little bit of the old feud, fodder versus veteran feuds.
Yeah.
And Cody, you know, Sean kept trying to attack the head. And Earl Hebner was getting all like Earl Hebnery.
That's why I tweeted
out. Threatening to disqualify him, like pushing him and threatening to disqualify him.
He's still the best damn ref in the business, hands down.
Guy ain't afraid to get physical.
Oh no, even at like what 70 something that he's got to be now. Like, I mean, the dude is still the best ref in the business, hands down.
Him and Mike Chioda will always be my favorite referees.
Yeah, I agree 100%.
You know, they make sure, you know. They put their hands on the guys. They definitely assert authority.
Yeah, and it was like...
I was just laughing at the cell job of him getting so pissed and I'll disqualify you, even though they're hitting each other belts.
Exactly. Like, that belt to the face shot, though, that was like, damn.
Cody's belt that Sean took and hit Cody in the face with, good God.
And it's like, I love like the way they, you know, personalized the whole storyline. And
they were stipping those belt shots. Cody's back.
Oh, yeah. Freaking. I mean, that his back was welted. Insanely welted, and the match, it's, you know, they said the storytelling was brilliant, and you know, Cody with the win, and it made sense, though. It was an elite win, but it made sense here. It was more of a storyline win than just a win.
I just felt bad for the guy. Well, Sean Spears comes to AEW just a job again. Like, leaves WWE to job to go to AEW to job.
Well, it's like, wait a minute. I don't think that was a job, but...
well, no, they're just making...
Yeah,
making a joke. He's still losing.
I say he's still losing. But now the guy's actually doing the farthest thing from losing, so, I mean...
Well, we ain't gonna make Peyton jokes here, so...
I wasn't making a Peyton joke. Damn. I mean, I'm just saying the guy's winning. I mean, he's signed to the hottest growing professional wrestling company in the country. Like, more power to him.
Think she's the hottest?
I said the hottest growing wrestling promotion in the country he signed to, and then, well...
Oh, I thought you said the hottest girl on the
promotion. No, I said...
Okay, apparently we know where my mind's at.
I'll say, we know where your mind... I'm just saying, I mean, the guy's... the guy's making a better career for himself because he's signed to the, you know, the fastest growing professional wrestling company in the country, probably in the world. And it's like the dude's definitely winning. So I like the way his character's changed too. I'm looking forward to seeing like more of that. That's what I'm talking about.
More sadistic side to him.
Yeah, it's like, that's what I'm talking about. Damn, where your mind at, cuz?
So what I want to know is why, like, this is the only part of, like, Arn Anderson hit the spine buster. Tully looks in the ring and he just like shakes his head and starts looking at Graham, looking at the ground, walks off.
Like, I was like, I was wondering the same thing about that.
He just left.
He just left. Like, it made, that was like, I think the only, like, really, I guess, botch of the match is because it's like, where did he go? I mean, why did he leave?
Arn came out, his former buddy, and
yeah, it's like, why did he leave? And it's like, why didn't he just, like, if they wanted to play up the angle, like, he wanted to know why his buddy came out and attacked his guy, he could have done that after the match. Like, why did he just walk off, and then you never hear about it again? Like, they don't even acknowledge.
MJF, Sean, and Cody.
Yeah, it's like, they don't even acknowledge that he walks off.
Commentators don't even either, I'll say.
It's like, they don't even acknowledge that he just leaves.
I mean, that was one of those, like, what the hell is going on here moments.
Yeah, that was one of those, like, weird-ass, like, wait, what?
All right, up next, the Lucha Bros vs. the Young Bucks, AAA World Tag Titles in a ladder match. These guys' rivalry have all been Tag Team Match of the Year candidates, but I think this one, good God.
Yeah, I agree. This one took the Lucha Bros Young Bucks saga crown for, honestly, I think best match those two have ever had together. I mean, it was absolutely fucking insane.
You're seeing, like, you know, them being set on ladders across, you know, you had the Matt on the ladder, and then Phoenix on one, and you have Pentagon on the other with Nick on the, like,
yeah,
doing, like, unified splashes against each other on ladders and through tables, you know. Saw Sunset Flip powerbomb through a table.
Over a ladder onto a
over
table.
Over a ladder.
And it's like,
yeah, it, you had him get unmasked on the ladder.
Yeah, that was interesting. And it was like, I thought one of the biggest things about watching this is not only how good of a, I mean, honestly, like, we always talk about how these two together is instant match of the year, tag team match of the year candidate. But I think this one in particular can actually be, honestly, be thrown in there for match of the year candidate. I mean, because it was like the things that they were doing, the way that I don't know if the saga's over, if they're going to have another one or whatnot. But it had that feeling of, like, a saga-ending kind of match. And
It was Lucifer's were the champs going in, right?
Yeah.
And they won. So, yeah, I think that is the end.
Yeah.
I'm assuming that would be the end. Then.
And they retained. So, yeah, it's like it had that feel because they were going literally, no pun intended. I know this is going to get a lot of pun references, but they were literally going all out in this match.
And yeah.
It's like I said, with the, you know, the fucking Tempe Suicidas through the ropes onto tables, double tables, the Sunset Flip power bombs, and another thing about watching this match was, like, it really shows you how damn talented and good these two are, because especially on the spots like the Sunset Flip power bomb over the ladder onto a table, like, if you move wrong in any instance of that, your neck is fucked. I mean, like, you're done.
Wasn't there a move where they had him, like, in a pile driver and then did a foot stomp?
Yeah, that was actually at the end. That was the ending sequence, yeah.
Like, that's fucking crazy.
Yeah, and it's like another spot where if you mess that up, if anybody in that sequence messes that up, you're screwed.
Which is even more surprising because Phoenix was nursing an injury before this match, and he definitely looked like it.
He did not show any signs of that whatsoever. And then I think it was cool to add, like, a little bit of story element in there with the unmasking on the ladder. And, I mean, the fact that Ray was, I mean, that Penta was able to do, like, what he was able to do after he got unmasked and then still roll out of the ring and get his mask put back on.
Yeah,
it was badass. I mean, the match was literally not just a tag team match of the year candidate, but a match of the year candidate.
Yeah, no, that was my second most look forward to match behind Omega and Pac, and it definitely, both those matches delivered to what I wanted, so.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, I have no, I definitely, I don't know if I put a match of the year candidate like you are yet, but I would definitely say tag team match of the year for sure.
Oh, yeah, easily.
That's hands down undisputed on that one.
Yeah, easily.
So, up next, we got the main event.
It is now time for the main event.
The first ever AEW World Champion was crowned today. And I think this also is a good booking decision, but also, it was the first ever, apparently, I did not know this, but it doesn't surprise me, more history's made on AEW. It was the first time a women's referee did a main event match.
That involved two men. Yeah.
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 Well, in general, even at WrestleMania.
In general, actually.
And Becky, yeah. So, I mean, it was the first time a women's referee refereed a main event.
Yep.
And so, especially a world title match.
Yeah.
What were your thoughts about that match? Did you like it? Did you?
It actually exceeded my expectations. I knew it was going to be good, but I didn't know it was going. I didn't like expect it to be that damn good. I mean, the match was absolutely incredible, and it really displayed what a. Because I think you actually tweeted this. What I'm about to say. It displayed what a world championship match should be.
Yeah.
Because you tweeted that, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. And it's like,
well, my closing thoughts on the show account.
Yeah. So it's like, I mean, and that's 100% true. It was the storytelling was absolutely insane. The close calls were, you know, it's like there were parts of the match where you didn't know who was actually going to win. And it had that feel of, it wasn't just a match, it was a war. It felt like a war. And it was absolutely incredible.
The right guy won, you think?
The right guy 100% absolutely won.
Yeah, I agree.
Like we talked about on the preview show, you know, not having Chris Jericho be your first champion was something that I felt not only should have happened, but needed to happen. Going into TV especially. Now, if you weren't going directly into TV, like, after this, you could have had Adam win it, but going into something as big as weekly television...
Yeah, their next show is going to be their weekly television.
Yeah, it's like, when you're going into weekly television, literally right after this, you need Chris Jericho's prestige, his pedigree, his name as your world champion. You need that. There's no other alternative. You have to have that. And the right guy absolutely won.
And Paige still came out looking like a million bucks.
Oh, yeah. And it didn't hurt Paige's stock whatsoever. And, I mean, he went to hell and back with Jericho, and he came out looking strong. And it was done perfectly, literally.
The storytelling was great, because there was several times I thought Paige was going to win that match. When Chris got busted open, I thought, you know, they were setting up to, like, he was going to wear it down, and Paige would hit him off the freaking...
Red eye,
yeah.
Then Jericho...
When he hit the red eye, and Jericho got like a 2¾ count, even the referee was shocked. Her fucking eyes bulged out of her head when he kicked out.
She sold the shit out of that.
I thought Paige was going to win it on that red eye.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah, I did too. It had that feeling of, well, all right, this is it. You know, this is the ending sequence. This is the ending of the match. And it was like, wait, holy shit, it's not. And everybody had that reaction, and she sold the shit out of that.
This was just one of the reasons you consider Jericho a GOAT. Look what he's doing at 49.
Yeah. I mean,
it's playing matches like that, like he's still, you know, obviously he's out of shape. He's not as healthy as he used to be, but when it comes into ring, like, his talent level is still there.
Yeah, I mean, it's like, that's why I tweeted out, before the match even started, Jericho equals the GOAT, and, you know, people can sit here all day and debate on that, but it's like, look at what the guy has done in his career, and he's 48, 49 years old. He's been in the wrestling business for 29 years, and he is still going out there. He might not look like he did in WWE or whatever, but... You know, the guy is still delivering matches of 5-star caliber at 49 years old. How many people can you say can do that to that level? And
crazy fact is he's been wrestling longer than Adam Page has been alive.
Yeah.
Adam Page is 28. Jericho's been wrestling for 29 years.
Yeah. It's like...
That's crazy.
He's in the ring with a guy who literally he's been wrestling before his opponent even existed on Earth. Like, what? How many... And again, how many matchups can you say that ever happens? And and then especially not only to see it happen, but for it to be as good as it is, because Jericho is still able to perform at that level, being, you know, obviously in not the physique that he used to have, but when he steps in the ring, it's like none of that matters. It doesn't even matter what he looks like, and it just all goes away, and he delivers those 5-star performances.
Yeah, what I like too is like you could tell the match. And it meant a lot to both guys of the emotion and like the, what do I need to do to win? You know, you can tell that the focus was on that title and that the championship was the number one priority. And that's what it should be in the company. Like, you could tell AEW prioritizes, you know, the world title. There's several matches that could have possibly been the main event, but they wanted the world title to be the main event.
Yeah. I mean,
hell, that's how it should be in a wrestling promotion.
I mean, you could have had Pac and Omega be the main event. You could have had you could have had the Lucha Bros and the Young Bucks, or you could have had Cody and Shawn. I mean, you could have had these match, but you know, it's good to see that championships have their rightful place here.
After all, that's what they're supposed to be. I know a lot of people consider them a prop nowadays, but still technically that, you know, you're the guy if you have the title.
Yeah, so it's like you're
supposed to be.
Yeah, you're the attraction. You're what's putting asses in seats. You're the guy, and you have to be in that spot if you're the guy.
And I just love how the storytelling showed how much the title meant to the company and those guys.
Yeah, it had that old school feel of like this is what we live for, this is what means the most to us. And
young blood versus old grizzly veteran, and grizzly veteran doesn't know how to put away the young blood, but you know, finally figures out after a terrible blade job.
I was like, it wasn't the best blade job ever, but
I'm still gonna tell Chris hasn't busted himself open in a while.
Yeah, you can tell he hasn't ever had to do that in a while.
Covering his whole, I don't know how he saw though, he was like literally covering his whole face, you know, right side of face.
And I say his eye, and it was going straight in his eyes. Like, there was no way that it wasn't in his eyes.
And what makes him the GOAT, too, is even though he couldn't see, he was still doing wrestling 101 and always moving to the left.
Yep.
For transitions.
Yep.
You always move with your left elbow and your left side when you're going to transitions for move. And he, even instinctively, we can barely see, was doing that.
Yeah, and it's like, that's why we, at least in my opinion, I will always say Chris Jericho is the GOAT. And by GOAT, I mean all around performer.
I'll say all around package.
I mean, there are people that you know, we can say are better, that were better on the mic than him, but all around mic, character, you know, if you think about it, Chris Jericho has been wrestling for 29 years. Yep. In those 29 years, you have never once, as long as you've been watching Jericho, whether you watched his whole career, whether you came in his WCW days or WWE days or wherever you came into his career at, you can never say that Chris Jericho has been stale.
Never.
Nope. I mean, there are very...
Dude can make the littlest things get over.
There are very, 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 very few people in the wrestling business, past or present, that you can say have never gotten stale. And it's like,
what about Austin?
I mean, it's like he's one of those very, very few that you can see. He never got stale either, in my opinion, anyway. You know, like his change ups.
Oh, you're right. Oh, even most top guys even get that. Like Hogan got stale, so he turned NWO.
Right,
you know?
And it's like Jericho. Rock. You know, Jericho's one of those guys who never got that way.
That shows his longevity.
Well, that's
he's
why
49. He's still putting asses in seats. He has a different kind of change every time he does something. I mean, he's you know, the apologist. Like, I'm the reason for your existence. I want to thank you. He got the word it over.
He got a cardboard.
Yeah, drink it in, man. He got a damn list over.
Like he got a piece of paper on a clipboard over.
I mean, he's literally done. I mean, the dude reinvents himself, and he can make the stupidest idea get over.
Right.
Like, imagine someone else trying to get a list over.
No, it wouldn't.
Like imagine Seth Rollins or Roman Reigns standing in the ring trying to put people on the list.
it wouldn't work. There's no way. I mean, as good as Rollins is, he couldn't do it. And we sure as hell know Roman couldn't do that. You know,
That's the point. That's the longevity. That's the GOAT stats.
That's why
we don't want to turn into that kind of conversation.
That's why we say Jericho is the GOAT, because he is the all around best that I think the business has ever seen.
Oh, and he's the, you know, guy that people tune into on TV. That's why he just needed to win.
Yeah,
people know who Chris Jericho is.
Yeah, because people, you know, people.
Hangman Page is a great wrestler, but a lot of casuals aren't gonna know who Hangman Page is yet.
Right.
Yes.
And it's like when you're one of the casuals who is on the fence about AEW, who might not know about them or, you know, hasn't checked them out yet, you're scrolling through the internet or whatever and you see that Chris Jericho is now their world champion, well, you're gonna tune into TNT on October 2nd to see what he's doing. Because you know who he is. You don't know who any of these other guys are, but you know who he is.
Yeah, I don't know how many, like, Moxley and Jericho are probably the only ones I think that people legitimately would know, no matter what kind of fan you are. I don't know about, like, Cody and Omega and all those guys, unfortunately, but...
Right.
So, yeah. That was it for All Out. Any closing sequences?
What would you rate it on a scale of 1 to 10?
9.5.
I do. Mine would be 9.5.
Yeah. You know, show is all around, like I said. You know, I think the Allen match and the Dark Order.
Yeah.
I'll make it a 9. I'm not going to be a mark. The Dark Order match, I think, kind of killed a 10-star rating.
Yeah, that's why I put it at a 9.5, because that match...
That and the booking on the... You know, the match itself was good, but I thought the booking itself was kind of weak. So right. I'll put a 9 out of 10.
So that wraps that up.
All right. Well, I look forward to, I guess, the next show AEW wise will be doing is when they make their TV debut, and I look forward to that.
Hell yeah!
And like we said, we'll have video camera, hopefully, in a couple, 2-3 episodes from now. So that'll be a new start. And we want to thank you, anybody that's been tuning in and helping us slowly grow. You know, we do this for our love of wrestling, but we also do it to, you know, interact with you guys. So just keep hitting those play buttons and those like buttons, and we'll keep on delivering content. So on that note, stay going, my friends.
Deuces.